Good evening. You are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM at Cable 282 and online at www.cfrc.ca. We are broadcasting live from the basement of Carruthers Hall here in Kingston, and you're now tuned in to Radio 613. It's your weekly Jewish politics, culture, religious life show here on CFRC 101.9 FM. And this week, we are just a few days before Tu B'Shvat, the 15th of Shvat, also known as the Jewish New Year of the Trees. So we will be covering Tu B'Shvat today on the show, speaking with Rabbi David Seidenberg, founder of neochassid.org, who's going to be sharing some Tu B'Shvat teachings with us. We are also going to be covering the Line 9 plan to build a to reverse the flow of a pipeline that will bring tar sands oil to Ontario. So we're going to be covering all of that and more, so keep tuning in.
Welcome to Radio 613, listeners. I'm your host, Malka. Glad you're joining us, and I'm glad to be here. Later in the show, we're going to be sharing some information about the Enbridge plans to reverse the Line 9 pipe that passes through dozens of communities, including within 50 kilometers of Kingston. This is a large environmental and Indigenous rights and I guess you could say human rights concern of our day, and timely to our show because it's a threatening plan to our trees. And coming up next week is Tu B'Shvat, which is at the end of this week, I guess, starts on Friday night, is the New Year of the Trees, the Jewish New Year of the Trees. And so welcome to our Tu B'Shvat show.
And to help us introduce key ideas and motivations for practicing the rituals of Tu B'Shvat. We spoke today with Rabbi David Seidenberg, who teaches all over North America and the world about Judaism and ecology, as well as Jewish spirituality and Hasidic song. And he has a book coming out next year on ecology and Kabbalah. And after speaking with him today, I don't know if you'd agree, Malka, but I'm looking forward to the book.
Definitely.
And we've made use of a lot of resources from Rabbi Seidenberg at neohasid, neohasid.org. And there's a whole section for Tu B'Shvat. So to begin, we're just going to get right into it now with Rabbi David Seidenberg.
Thank you very much for joining us on the show. Radio 613 has interacted with your website primarily around accessing the resources that you have for celebrating Tu B'Shvat. And on the website, you've got all kinds of things for doing a Seder on Tu B'Shvat. Now, a lot of Jews may not know that there is such a thing as a Tu B'Shvat Seder. So maybe a good place to start would be for you to just share a little bit with our listeners about, you know, what is a Tu B'Shvat Seder?
Yes. Well, Tu B'Shvat is the new year for the trees. In the Mishnah, that means the fiscal year for the trees. That is, do you pay taxes on your crop for this year or the next year, depending on when you harvest the fruit and when the fruit grows. So it wasn't until the 1700s that it really became something else besides a fiscal year cutoff. Mm. And the Kabbalists turned it into something, the celebration of the tree of life, not just a new year for the trees, but a celebration of the trees and a celebration of the tree of life. And the tree of life was celebrated specifically through eating fruit of actual trees. Right. So there was a connection in the minds of the Kabbalists and in the spirituality of the Kabbalists between the physical trees and the fruit that we get from them and the cosmic tree of life that represents the relationship between God and the entire universe. So they started with eating 30 different kinds of fruit, actually, in the original Tu B'Shvat Seder, and with some beautiful, beautiful blessings. Come the State of Israel and the lead-up to the State of Israel, Tu B'Shvat was revived in a different way as a time to plant trees. It's actually not the best time to plant trees.
Right.
But it became a great time to advertise planting trees.
Yeah.
And so that's how it got woven into Zionism. And then in America, it became an environmental holiday, combining different elements of all of these things. And that really didn't start till pretty late, like the first ecological Tu B'Shvat Seder or environmental Tu B'Shvat Seder might have been like probably 1980s even, or 1970s, with that kind of consciousness. Remember, of course, the environmental movement is not so old either.
Yeah.
In its modern form.
60s, really, right? 1957, maybe?
Well, you have Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, and then you have the vision, the view of the earth from the moon. And those are two really important points, which sort of were watersheds in consciousness, I think. So similarly, in Jews, some of the earliest Tu B'Shvat actions actually was connected with the Vietnam War and the response to the use of Agent Orange to defoliate forests with the idea of trying to plant trees in Vietnam. And that was one of the earliest sort of explicitly politically minded actions related to Tu B'Shvat that wasn't about Israel.
Oh, interesting.
Of Israel.
Right.
Yeah. Some of the earliest ecologically minded environmental Tu B'Shvat figures were happening in New York City, actually, are some of the earliest documents I've seen.
Right.
I haven't searched the world for all the possible documentation, but that's what I've seen in my work.
Yeah.
Tu B'Shvat has a Kabbalistic structure. It has meanings related to the land of Israel. It has meanings related to ecology and a sort of kind of Jewish earth day. And all of these things get combined into Tu B'Shvat in different ways by different people.
Right.
And people emphasize different aspects of that. So what I do with Tu B'Shvat Seder is that I emphasize the Kabbalistic structure and then try to create a structure that's very open to people bringing whatever they want to, whatever mm-hmm. political issues they want to, whatever text, poetry, etc., within that framework.
And to help us understand that framework, could you speak about how eating the fruits of the trees is an aspect of the flow from the great source of life to our world?
Yeah. So the Kabbalistic idea is that there's a cosmic tree that sustains the universe, and its roots are in heaven, although we're talking about beyond heaven, the sirot, the sort of potentialities and powers through which God creates the universe. And that is brought into physical manifestation through a process of emanation. And the fruit of that cosmic tree is the physical world, and especially the sort of, in the Kabbalistic framework, the highest form of the fruit is the human soul that gets born into the world. Mm. And everything is there to sustain that process. But one of the ideas in Kabbalah is that humans occupy a liminal position in the universe, connecting the higher realms
right.
and the physical reality.
Right.
And that's why it's so important for human souls to become embodied on this earth, in this planet, in this universe, because we have that special role to play. And the way we play that special role for Kabbalists is by doing Kabbalistic rituals. And what it means is when we unify our intention and our spirit and our physical actions together with the desire to bring blessing into the universe, when we unify ourselves with that intention, we actually have the power to bring blessing into the universe. And so on this day of Tu B'Shvat, where we understand the beginning of the first growth that will lead to the fruit to be happening, by meditating on the fruit and eating the fruit and praying for the fruit trees, we actually can increase the flow of blessing to the fruit trees so that there will be good crops, earth-sustained abundance, not just for us, but for all creatures. It's very important that Kabbalah is the first, and one might even say the only system of Jewish thought in which the purpose of Judaism is to bring blessing to all creatures, and not just the Jewish people, and not just to human beings.
Hmm.
That was a big leap that Kabbalah made, and it made it right at the beginning in Sefer Bahira, the 11th century, is where that idea is first articulated. And it's a wonderful idea, and it's so important. It's so important as a counterweight to other aspects of Judaism, you know, the belief that we're really here for a purpose that's greater than ourselves.
Yeah.
So if we don't serve that greater purpose, we're actually not serving the purpose of Judaism at all, basically.
So you are listening to our conversation with Rabbi Seidenberg here on Radio 613. Next, in the next part of the interview, Rabbi Seidenberg explains the fluid notion of creative and God from a Kabbalistic perspective.
So the traditional model of creation is that God is in one category, and the creation is in an entirely different category, and God acts on creation.
Yeah.
God creates the world as a kind of separate system from God. In Kabbalah, it's not like that. In Kabbalah, God emanates, and the process between God and creation is one of many, many steps. There's no place at which God ends and creation begins.
Mm-hmm.
All of it is God, and all of it past that first step is, to some degree, creation. That is, the physical creation is the manifestation of a process of a chain of emanations, and all of it connects directly back to God. And there's a belief in Kabbalah that one can actually understand the processes of creation by studying the story of creation in the Torah, and by understanding what happened before the first verse in the Torah that led to the creation.
Hmm.
So one is attempting, in a sense, to get behind the process of creation through the rituals that we do according to Kabbalah. And that's true in the Tu B'Shvat Seder as well. We're trying to lift our consciousness up so that it reaches beyond the beginning of creation, almost,
right.
In a metaphorical way, of course, to bring down the original blessing that is the source of all life, which is characterized in Kabbalah as chesed, loving kindness. And can be described as a kind of a free gift of love without anything needing to be returned, without anything needing to be given back. So God freely gives love to the universe without needing anything back from the universe. And that is the act of creation, as Kabbalah understands it. But they divide this chain of emanation into four worlds. You know, not all Kabbalists divide the emanation into the same process. And, of course, the fundamental picture of the Tree of Life is that there are 10 sefirot, which can be very vaguely and not accurately translated as powers. But it's actually much more complicated than that, and it means vessels. And it's hard to explain exactly, but it means some kind of potency through which God creates the world. And there are these 10 qualities. One of them being chesed, which I just mentioned, loving kindness, through which God creates the world. But they're divided up into four stages, and that comes from Moshe Cordovero, for anyone who wants to look that up. And the four stages are going from the bottom, that is the most physically manifest, Asiya. I'll translate these in a second. Asiya, Yitzira, Bria, and Atzilut. Asiya means doing, making, the physical. Yitzira means creativity. But also on the physical level. Bria means creativity in the sense of creation of something from nothing, and it's the kind of creation that God does.
Right.
And Atzilut means pure emanation. It means literally next to-ness. That is, one is right next to God, as it were, in when we're talking about the level of Atzilut. So we start with the lower level that would be called lower, perhaps, the more physical. We go up through the levels. In meditation, in what kind of food or drink we eat or partake of, in what kind of blessings we say. And in that process, we reach into sort of the roots of creation in order to, what can we call it, lubricate the channels. So you're priming the pump of cosmic energy, so to speak,
okay.
through these rituals. That's the idea.
In the sort of flow chart, the one-page flow chart Seder, well, Tu Bishvat Haggadah that you provide, you've sort of translated the four levels differently. You've said they're the practical, the emotional, the intellectual, and the spiritual. And then the process is eating different fruits and drinking different combinations of red and white wine through which, I guess, as you say, that's the ritual through which you're, the purpose is to try to prime the pump, as you said, and, reach up towards those, through those different levels. Is that right? And if so, how does the practical ritual of eating the fruit and drinking the wine help us achieve that sort of spiritual movement or... what is the role of the ritual, the actual thing that we're doing, the eating?
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. That's a good question. So the one thing is that in order to make the connection between the spiritual and the physical, one has to be doing something physical.
Mm-hmm.
It's not enough to have an idea or just a prayer.
Yeah.
Even in prayer in Judaism, it's a requirement that you move your body and your lips. It doesn't count as prayer if you simply think the prayer.
Right.
Everything has a physical manifestation, and from a Kabbalistic perspective, the purpose of that physical manifestation is to create the link between the physical realms and the spiritual realms. So we have the spiritual realms going on inside of us and the physical realms going on through our bodies. And we are uniting the two together by doing them at the same time.
Right.
So we're eating fruit, physical fruit, sweet fruit from trees, that brings us blessing, and at the same time meditating on bringing blessing to the trees and to the Tree of Life itself, and to bring blessing through the Tree of Life to all the actual fruit trees in the world that are sustaining people and animals and everything else.
Yeah.
And we do that with the physical taste, with the physical sensation, and we also specifically with the physical benefit that we're getting from the trees. So we get a blessing from them and can give a blessing to them.
Right. Is this sort of what you mean by Kabbalah really emphasizing the need for embodiment in our practice and way of living Jewishly?
That's one aspect of that, yeah.
Right. It's a really challenging idea to be immediately returning the blessing that we're getting, having it be almost one and the same. I wanted to ask you a question about mindful eating, because I know you have that in some of your sources. And, you know, in our kind of overconsumption, capitalist, individualist sort of way that we're living and eating, consuming food, it's even people who are trying to live healthily, often it's promoted in a very individualistic way. But I find this to be a real challenge to that, because, yes, we're welcoming the blessing of fruit, things that sustain us, but it's in the same, I wouldn't say breath, same swallow, we're returning in our intentions, and I guess hopefully our actions following that, the blessings back.
One thing that is not obvious from the Kabbalah is that Kabbalah can be a very intellectual process. Like, you know, you think about these ideas while you do this action.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a whole element that's not described in the Kabbalah, but is obvious when you play with it, which is that when you bring this level of intention to eating, it actually does change the experience of eating.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to use Kabbalah, by the way. It's enough to say a real prayer before you eat. You don't have to know all the Kabbalistic ideas at all. Having them might also deepen the experience. But actually, I find if I say a blessing before I'm eating, as is mandated by traditional rabbinic Judaism, and if I say that with full intention on each word, it doesn't count. It counts, but it doesn't work to simply blurt out the blessing without thinking about it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if you really savor each word the same way as you would savor each taste, then when you get to the final word of the blessing, and the final word of the blessing is eating the food that you're blessing,
mm-hmm.
then the taste can be truly magnified in amazing ways.
Yeah,
it's really, I recommend to everyone to try that. You can use a traditional Jewish blessing, or you can use your own blessing, but to really focus on the moment you're in and what you're about to experience, and to give gratitude and thanks for it, really does change the way things taste.
Right. So there's one blessing that we say after eating each fruit in the Seder, that borei nefashot rabot v'chesronan al kol ma shebarata v'hachayot bahem nefesh kochai baruchei ha'olamim. Blessed be you, the one who created so many different living things, all needing each other to make one life, interwoven through them all as one soul. Blessed be the life of all worlds. I believe that's your translation. Is that correct?
It's a translation meant for a certain context where people are coming already with a very committed spiritual perspective, but not necessarily any familiarity with the Hebrew.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I might translate it different ways in different contexts.
Right.
That level of competition may be irrelevant to this interview.
No.
But yeah, that is a translation that I've played with and used at different
sure.
times.
Yeah.
Basically, we have a number of different blessings we say before food, before different foods that we eat, and each one is specific to certain categories of food. And we have certain blessings that we say after we eat, and those also are specific to certain categories of food. But there's lots of things that don't fall into a specific category. And so they get the blessing before, that's called Shehakol Nihiyeh Bidvaro, which means, blessed be you, Hashem, our God, ruler of all space and time, the usual beginning, through whose word everything comes into being. Shehakol, that the all, Nihiyeh, comes into being, Bidvaro, by his word, literally. And likewise, after eating, there's one blessing that we say that goes for anything, and it doesn't have to be a specific category. So there's specific blessings afterwards for bread, for things made out of flour, for particular fruits that come from the land of Israel, and for wine. But for everything else, the blessing is Borei Nefashot, the one that you just gave a translation of. Blessed be you, who creates many souls and everything they lack, for all that you created, to give life through them to the soul of all life.
Right.
And that blessing counts for the listeners, it's great to memorize that blessing because it's really, really just one line, and it counts for everything.
Right.
So if you want to learn one blessing, only one, and know it, it's the most beautiful. It has the deepest ecological wisdom in it of any blessing in Judaism, it works for everything.
What did you say? It has the deepest ecological
wisdom. It's the most explicit ecological prayer that we have.
Right.
Of any prayer.
It's good
in any context.
It's good to have one when you don't know the fruit well. Like if you don't know if it's from a tree or from a vine, or from a or what it is, then you it's good to know an option.
Yep.
Also, sometimes I forget
to
say.
You can do it for anything, even if you do know what it's from.
Right.
Right.
Also, I forget to say the blessing sometimes before, you know, in a rush, not doing the mindful, but then sort of halfway through, I'm like, okay, well, I'd like to be, you know, eating this mindfully. I forgot to say the blessing. Okay, well, now I can say one after and do sort of mindful digesting, I guess.
Well, you can do both, you know, even if you remember in the middle of eating that you forgot to say the blessing at the beginning.
Right.
If you still have more to eat, you can still say the blessing.
Gotcha.
Right.
If you just have one more bite that you're going to eat, that's all you need to say a blessing, so you can still say it in the middle. And you also can say it in the beginning, but not do it with full kavana. I mean, you might have to come back, and, you know, formally speaking, you can't re-say a blessing if you've already said it, because you've already sort of discharged the obligation. But you can still bring your intentionality into the moment, and your focus and your gratitude. So that can happen at all times.
Thank you.
that is a song by Laura Wetzler from the album Kabbalah Music, Songs of the Jewish Mystics. You heard the track Wa'eda Ma. That is a song originating from the 12th century. It's written in Apulia, Italy, by Ovadia Hager. And it's a song that you're hearing on our Tu B'Shvat special. We are going to finish the interview with Rabbi David Seidenberg, who was helping us learn about the Kabbalistic origins of the Tu B'Shvat Seder. Here is the rest of that conversation.
There is the pre-Eitz Hadar, which is the blessing, the fruit of the majestic tree, which you provide a full translation of as well as an abridged version, which I guess is a blessing that is taken from that first Tu B'Shvat Seder from the 17th century. On the website, you write that you'd like to emphasize one part of the prayer, which is, may all creation return to its original strength, and may all the sparks of divine energy, whether scattered by our hands or by the hands of our ancestors, or by the sin of the first human against the fruit of the tree, be returned and included in the majestic might of the tree of life. Why is this an important part of the prayer to emphasize for you?
So that blessing, what's so meaningful about it? Aspects of the environmental crisis that we face, or that we imagine we face today, especially with climate change, but the science and understanding of how all life is interrelated through evolution, and with the Kabbalah, these words can be applied in all these different ways in different realms, with the basic idea that humans do have the power and have weakened the tree of life.
Right.
The tree of life in the Kabbalistic sense, but also in the evolutionary sense, also in the sense of ecosystems being the tree of life that sustains living things, and that we need to restore what we've destroyed, whatever way we can.
Yeah.
So to pray that we be able to do that is a very important prayer, because we don't really know how to do it, is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know how we're going to fix the mess that we're making.
Right.
But we need to still keep our minds and our hearts and our consciousness focused on the fact that we got to figure that out. And praying is a really important way to do that.
Yeah.
So saying prayers like that, it also, of course, just gives us a moment to recognize that we have this connection to all life, even if we don't pay attention to it in the way we've structured our society.
Right.
Now. And so that's the kind of wake-up moment that brings consciousness. See, I use Kabbalah, and I care very deeply about Kabbalah, but I wouldn't call myself a Kabbalist. I don't think it's enough just to do the ritual. If the ritual changes your consciousness, then it should also change how you live in the world.
Definitely.
And what you're going to do for the sake of the world. And so we need those moments in liturgy where we don't just say the prayer, but where the prayer wakes us up to think about what are we going to do next. And for me, that blessing, that part of the blessing really makes me, and I hope other people, say to ourselves, well, what are we going to do? If we're praying to fix the tree of life from all the ways that we've damaged it, then what are we going to do next to actually fix the tree of life?
That's a really great answer. Thank you.
We did want to know, what will you be doing for Tu B'Shvat this year?
Well, I'm actually leading the Seder at one of our local synagogues in Northampton, the Conservative Synagogue.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually been trying to develop a new Seder this year, although I'm not sure if it's going to come together. Because what I've been thinking is that if we're celebrating the Tree of Life, let's talk about what we know of as the Tree of Life in a biological sense. That is the five kingdoms of life, the bacteria and archibacteria, the protista, the protists, fungi, plants, and animals. And let's have five cups to the Seder for each of the kingdoms of life. The difficulty of this is that nobody until relatively recently knew how fungi worked. And they didn't even know that Pratapista and Bhaktivedanta existed. So finding Midrash or Kabbalah or anything that has, you know, Jewish content to speak directly to those realms is very hard. So I've been kind of banging my head on the wall about that and thinking about that. So I might end up just doing the normal Seder, which is take a bunch of texts, use the flow chart, go through the flow chart and say, you know, what I usually do, which is who wants to add something at this level of text, you know, explain what the level is and what it means, and then say who wants to share something that relates to this level. So that's what I usually do. And everyone, when I do a normal Seder, gets a free, you know, the text study handouts that I have, and people can take whatever they want from those sheets or anything else that they brought, a poem, song, a song, and add it in. So I may just end up doing that kind of Seder. Oh, you know, I didn't even say about the three levels of fruit. So the three levels are with the shell, with the pit, mm-hmm. and something that's wholly edible.
Right.
Wholly edible means you can swallow the seeds. It doesn't mean that you're actually trying to eat them, but just that you can swallow them without harming yourself.
Right.
So these represent different levels of being totally accessible to spirits. And so you move from the ones with the shells to the ones with the pit to the ones that are wholly edible. And then the fourth level, which is considered this level so close to God that it's beyond physical representation, you can actually physically represent it with a beautiful smell.
Mm-hmm.
Which, because smell often is used to symbolize spirit because
right.
it's invisible to our eyes, even though, of course, it is physical. So I'm going to do some variation or some combination of a five kingdoms of life Seder and a traditional four worlds Jewish Shvat Seder. And I won't know till after Jewish Shvat. Well, I'll know when it's happening, which one I'm doing.
Right.
You'll have to call me afterwards to find out.
And for people who have never done a Jewish Shvat Seder, what kind of recommendation would you have for someone who wants to do it as a place to start, or as, you know, what they might want to try?
There's so much resources. Yeah, I'm sorry for interrupting. There's so many resources out there that are available, and Chazon has a Haggadah. Kojel has a lot of resources. On my website, neochassid.org, there are several different versions of the flowchart Haggadah. One is called the basic flowchart Haggadah, which doesn't use a lot of heavy Kabbalistic language. That's the thing I'm having trouble with, that I'm having trouble downloading. I'm going to make sure it gets fixed before you do your interview, before you air the interview, actually, so that people can download it.
Okay.
And that's a great start on neochassid.org. And then there's a simple Haggadah on just two pages that you can also download from neochassid.org. That's a great starting place and is enough if you just want to do a simple Seder. It's enough. You don't need to take down more if you feel like that's enough for you. So it's pretty easy to put together. The main thing is to enjoy it and to feel the blessing of the trees and to give them blessing back. That's really it. So, you know, you could throw out the Seder and just do the pleasure of eating the fruit and giving them blessings back. So I want to add one more thing also to the whole idea, which is that the fruit trees are so important in Kabbalah because they're considered an image of God, just like human beings are an image of God. And the reason why fruit trees are considered an image of God is because, at least from the Kabbalistic perspective, they give without needing anything in return. They give us their fruit. We know, of course, biologically, they do need something in return. They get us transporting and planting their seeds. But from a Kabbalistic perspective, it's a symbol or a manifestation of how God operates with the world, which is to give freely.
Right.
And so that's why fruit trees are an image of God. And that's why fruit trees became so important and why the Kabbalah grabbed onto this idea of the nira of the trees and made it something so important and so big, because it represents how God connects with the world for Kabbalists.
Yeah, it seems like that pre-Eitz Hadar prayer illustrates the fruit tree as an image of God in that blessing itself.
Mm, yes, it is.
Was there something else you wanted to add?
Oh, I was just going to say, if anyone has a question and they want to send it to me by Thursday, say, you know, they can always email me. And I'm happy to try to respond. I could. My email is rebduvid86@gmail.com, REBDUVID 86.
Thank you so much for putting these resources out that are totally accessible. It really, it means a lot, and for kind of further sharing and teaching on the show today. It's really great. especially sort of, you know, the having, you know, mystical Judaism be something that can be incorporated and worked into our practice and our life. It's, you know, that's a real blessing that you've provided. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I really appreciate you guys calling me.
Thank you.
Chag Sameach. Be well.
Chag Sameach.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, you're tuned in to Radio 613 on CFRC 101.9 FM. And that was our interview that we did just earlier today with Rabbi David Seidenberg. If you want to email Rabbi Seidenberg, as he mentioned, the email is reb david86@gmail.com. And the website is neohasid.org. And of course, if you ever want to contact us and communicate with our radio collective, our website is radio613.wordpress.com and radio613@riseup.net. Our Tu B'Shvat show is not over, but we're going to take a quick break.
Yo, DJ, pump this party! Party!
If all you do is party, then tune into The Hustle every Wednesday from 10 to 11 p.m. with DJ Bolt. Or listen to it at cfrc.ca.
All day and night.
Where you'll hear the best dance, electro, disco, funk, hip-hop, and remixes. That's The Hustle every Wednesday from 10 to 11 p.m. right here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Oh, yeah, all right.
So, welcome back to Radio 613 Tu B'Shvat special. It was really wonderful hearing there from Rabbi David Seidenberg, learning about the Tu B'Shvat Seder, and excited to really be connecting intention, spirit, and action through that holiday that's coming up this week. I really think that Rabbi Seidenberg brought the connections between our responsibility to return the blessings that we get from trees, from the planet back, and that, you know, in addition to doing that through prayer and ritual, there's all sorts of action so that can be taken to, you know, repair the vessels. So there's some local organizing that Malka is going to talk to us about, and we're going to hear a short video about the Line 9 oil pipeline in a minute. Also, we weren't able to speak with Jonah from the Stop the JNF campaign in time for today's show, but we're going to have a special podcast posted in time, hopefully, in time for Tu B'Shvat this week. Just a quick background, a bit of information. This is from the International Jewish Anti-Zionist Network. Last year, we sent a delegation to Palestine to document evidence and learn about the role of the Jewish National Fund in the ongoing theft of Palestinian land and property, land and cover-up of the displacement of the Palestinian people. Per the request of the Palestinian Farmers Union Stop the Wall Anti-Apartheid Committee, the Palestinian BDS National Committee, and the villages who have lost trees, agricultural plots, farms, and homes to the Israeli military, this year we are sending another delegation to plant trees in villages that are welcoming the effort to replant a fraction of what they have lost. So looking forward to just hearing how that delegation went, and all the more important, I think, with what Rabbi Seidenberg was mentioning about trees, just like humans, being in the image of God and what it means to be destroying olive trees in Palestine. So, Malka, do you want to speak to us now about Line 9?
Sure. So, upcoming destruction of trees and other things potentially is the reversal of Enbridge's Line 9, which is a pipeline that runs from Sarnia to Montreal. And the proposal is to reverse the flow of the pipeline in order to transport oil from the tar sands through Ontario and to Montreal. And so there is growing opposition to this plan for a whole variety of reasons. And so we're now going to play for you the audio from a video that you can find online, and I'll give you the website after the video about the plans for the reversal of Line 9 and a handful of the many reasons why it's a bad idea for us all. So here's that information. A 101 on Line 9. The tar sands come to Ontario.
This is our opportunity in our own land, in our own territory, to take a stand against the tar sands industry and to take a stand for our land and for our future generations.
Line 9 was built in 1975 to transport imported oil from Montreal to refineries in Sarnia. Enbridge has now applied to Canada's National Energy Board to reverse its direction of flow so that it can transport oil from Sarnia to Montreal. Enbridge has applied to transport heavy oil, a category that includes tar sands. The tar sands are a mixture of sand, clay, and a tar-like substance called heavy crude oil, or bitumen.
Line 9 obviously is important because it's another route for tar sands, bitumen, to spread across the country.
They have planned over the next 5 years to spend $40 billion and build 14,000 kilometers of new pipelines.
The pipeline passes through cities, watersheds, rivers, and farmland. 9.1 million people live within 50 kilometers of Line 9. Enbridge has a very poor record of environmental impact. Between 1999 and 2008, Enbridge listed 610 spills that released approximately 21 million liters of hydrocarbons into the surrounding area. But Enbridge is most known for their 3.8 million liter spill in Kalamazoo, Michigan in 2010, amounting to the largest inland oil spill in U.S. history. Beyond the threat that Line 9 poses to the areas that surround it, the pipeline is also necessary for the expansion of the most destructive project on the planet.
Some people say that the tar sands is just situated, it's just the problem for Alberta. But what we see that's happening now is it's becoming this huge industrial complex with the pipelines that are expanding and transporting this tar sands oil.
Line 9 passes within 50 kilometers of 18 native communities in Ontario and Quebec. However, Enbridge has evaded meaningful consultation with these communities. This is a native rights issue, an environmental issue, a human issue, and a planet issue. This is the big picture of the pipeline.
You're not going to win the war if you don't win the battle. And the battle is Line 9, the battle is Northern Gateway, the battle is XL.
With so much at risk, we need to work together to stop Enbridge Line 9. Change is possible.
So are we going to facilitate and be a conduit for tar sands expansion and exploitation, or are we going to say, let's move towards a renewable future?
In the most basic way, we're humans, and we would not exist if it not be for this land, and it's easy to forget that. We're asking you to be reminded that you are tied to this land as well. You cannot exist, all of us cannot exist without this land.
Okay, so, sorry about that. So that was a 101 on Line 9, a video produced by a whole bunch of people. Before I get into that, so there are, you know, you heard several voices. Some of the voices you heard were from Art Sterrett, the executive director of Coastal First Nations, a short clip from Maude Barlow, lots of great stuff from Melissa Elliott, a youth activist from Six Nations of Grand River Territory, Albert Cole, a lawyer with EcoJustice. The narration was by Darren Schilling. The video was done by Rachel Deutsch, and many people collaborated on research and story development and script development. So that was the sort of short version of the video. There's a longer version that I encourage you all to check out. It's at vimeo.com, vimeo.com/5684280. That's vimeo.com/5684280. We will link to that video on our blog at radio613.wordpress.com. So the reversal of line 9 is a really scary prospect. We know that the toxic waste from the tar sands has, you know, already in the area of the tar sands out west, having an impact on the health and well-being of lots of communities, in particular Indigenous communities in Fort Chipewyan and elsewhere, increasing rates of cancer and autoimmune disease. Also, as it is pointed out in the longer video, it's, you know, the tar sands and the reversal of Line 9 will, you know, it's a violation of treaties and treaty rights because of hunting and fishing rights. And, you know, it seems, you know, all of a sudden, a whole bunch of white people care about treaty rights, so that's pretty cool. So there is some organizing going on across the country against the reversal of Line 9. There is a day of action on coming up. Actually, it's on Tu B'Shvat on Saturday, January 26th, which is pretty timely. So if you are in Kingston area, there from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. at Market Square in Kingston, there will be a gathering and action in opposition to Line 9. You can get more information about it on Facebook. Just search Enbridge Line 9 Day of Action, and you should find that.
And another related event we want to let people know about, the folks who are organizing Idle No More here in Kingston, traditional Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabe lands, are putting together an Idle No More teach-in at Queen's University this Thursday at 7 p.m. It's at Kingston Hall 101 on the Queen's campus. There's information about the accessibility of the venue at queensu.ca. If folks want to learn more about Idle No More and what people are doing locally, you know, with regard to Indigenous sovereignty, defending the land, certainly encourage folks to head out to the teach-in and in future events.
So we're just coming to the end of our show for today. As always, please do contact us with your thoughts and feedback. We'd love to hear from you. It's radio613@riseup.net. And for more information about the show, radio613.wordpress.com. And live most weeks at 7 p.m. here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Have a great week.
Bye.
תחילת גילה וראשית רינה, תחילת שבח וראשית שירה, תחילת גילה וראשית רינה. משוררים השרים המשרתים בכל יום לאדוני אלוהי, משוררים השרים המשרתים בכל יום לאדוני אלוהי. גיר גיר כיסא כבוד לנרנן מושב עליון, גיר גיר כיסא כבוד לנרנן מושב עליון. The beginning of praise and the start of song, the beginning of joy and the start of jubilation. Rejoice, rejoice, let every voice sing for joy at the seed of creation. Exalt, exalt, a precious cup marvelously made, fill it up. Rejoice, rejoice, a precious cup marvelously made, oh, fill it up. Hania, hania, clear handa, shenas of the half live a fail. Hania, hania, clear handa, shenas of the half live a fail. המשוררים השרים המשרתים בכל יום לאדוני אלוה המשוררים השרים המשרתים בכל יום לאדוני אלוה גיל גיל כיסא כבוד ונעלם ממושב עליון גיל גיל כיסא כבוד ונעלם ממושב עליון הריח הריח כלי חמדה שנעשה בעבר ואלה Hasadim, hasharim, b'chol yom l'adonai Elohai b'shoredim. Hasadim, hasharim, b'chol yom l'adonai Elohai. Gil, gil, kisei kavod, paneh lanin moshav elyon. Gil, gil, kisei kavod, paneh lanin moshav elyon. Hariah, hariah, kli yechanda, shana hasab.